90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City, Community Radio. Streaming online at www.kkfi.org.
The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
Hello and good morning. Welcome to Cowtown Conversations. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. Today, we're going to be talking about the CDC housing order, and our guest is local attorney Julie Anderson of Anderson & Anderson Law Firm. And if you have questions, give us a call on the studio line, 816-931-5534. That's 816-931-5534. Good morning, Julie. Welcome to Cowtown Conversations.
Oh, great. Hi. Nice to be here.
Julie, can you tell listeners a little bit about yourself? Are you originally from the Kansas City, Missouri area?
No, I grew up in Nebraska. I went to undergrad at William Jewell College and then law school at the University of Missouri in Columbia. And I've been here practicing law for several years, and I exclusively represent real estate investors. My law practice has an eviction department where we represent landlords, a collection department where we're collecting money on behalf of real estate investors, small lenders, hard money lenders, soft money lenders. I also have a foreclosure department where I'm representing investors and banks, and a bankruptcy department where I'm representing creditors, where you've had someone who owes you money file for bankruptcy, and I'm trying to get those assets back out into the state court system so that we can turn them into cash.
So, Julie, do you practice in Missouri and Kansas or just Missouri only?
I do practice in both Missouri, Kansas, and Nebraska.
So we're here today talking about the CDC eviction moratorium, but there, many people may not know, there wasn't a moratorium in the CARES Act, the stimulus bill that was passed earlier this year by the House and signed by the President. How did the CARES Act differ from this act that the CDC just put into place the beginning of September?
So on March 27th of this year, Congress passed the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act, which placed a moratorium on residential evictions and foreclosures for lenders and owners who have a who receive federal assistance, meaning Section 8, a VA, a voucher of some sort, or have a federally related financing on the property. So any of my Freddie Fannie clients, anybody who has a, you know, federally related mortgage could not move forward. And at the end, when it expired on July 27th, a 30-day notice to vacate was required. So once there are significant number of units in the country that were covered by the CARES Act, most multifamily housing complexes are financed and are federally backed mortgage financed. So almost all the apartment complexes could not move forward with evictions between March 27th and July 27th. And then they have to issue another 30-day notice. So we were just getting started here at the end of August on filing on these multifamily housing complexes and some of the single-family homes. And Congress, of course, does not get along, as I'm sure everyone in this country has noticed, and was unable to agree to any type of continuance of the CARES Act, which is why the President of the United States issued an executive order to the CDC saying, I want you to use your power to place a moratorium on evictions and foreclosures.
So what does the order that was issued by the CDC and signed by the executive order signed by the President state now? Does it continue just for those that are Freddie and Fannie Mae, or does it apply to everyone?
It applies to every landlord in the country, this was a big deal for investors who have rental properties, kind of a little bit of a kick to the gut in that it's all residential properties in the entire country are impacted by this. And the moratorium, though, only applies to those cases for the non-payment of rent, meaning any eviction for any other reason than non-payment of rent is not impacted by this. So we don't have a moratorium. And I'm encouraging people not to overreact to this, because this moratorium only applies, again, to non-payment of rent cases and cases where the tenant files a declaration with the court. And that declaration has to state under oath, under the penalty of perjury, that the tenant is not able to pay rent because of a coronavirus reason. An eviction would cause him or her to become homeless or have to move into some place that was shared by other people living in close quarters, and that he or she has used her best efforts to obtain rental assistance and best efforts to pay as much rent as possible. In theory, this means that not just every tenant who's decided to say, bug off, I'm not paying rent, qualifies for this order. And ultimately, this order does not relieve those tenants from the obligation to pay their rent or their utilities or their late fees. It just means that we can't evict them until the end of this year. I think some landlords' worst nightmare is that if they fell under the CARES Act since March, and their tenants have not paid since March, now if they fall under this order, they essentially will not. And once the courts are so backed up at the beginning of the year, assuming this is not extended, I mean, some investors could be looking at a year without any rental income.
And then that puts them into a bind. And unfortunately, this act does not cover those who are investors or property owners from being able to being foreclosed on by the lender, correct?
Correct. There is no stimulus package at this time for real estate investors. There's no, Congress has not passed, the President of the United States has not issued any executive order that compensates landlords for the loss of rental income.
So go ahead.
Which is why many, many of my clients are particularly upset. I mean, as another kind of low blow, this order does outline criminal penalties and fines for landlords up to $500,000 and enhanced penalties if the landlord violates this order, which results in the death of a tenant. So there's some pretty harsh penalties that will be enforced by the Department of Justice. Should landlords just decide, oh, forget it, I'm going to take off the front door, I'm going to boot the tenant's car, I'm going to turn off the utilities. That's just really not an option right now in light of these penalties. My general message to landlords right now is that I'm encouraging my clients to become almost social workers. You've got to start. I mean, you're going to have to landlord harder than you've ever landlorded before. You've got to start communicating with your tenants. You've got to start sending letters out to your tenants saying, do you need an accommodation? What's going on in your life? How can I help you? How can I help you get money to pay me? And there are a significant number of rental assistance programs right now, money coming from the government as well as money coming from private charities. I have a lot of resources available for investors and landlords on my website for free. You can download sample letters, how to communicate with your tenants, what to say. You can download a list of resources for rental assistance and give it to your tenants. My website is MO for Missouri, KS for Kansas, law for the law. .com. So MOKSlaw.com under the forms tab. And you'll see for each moratorium, I have sample letters for how you communicate with your tenants, what you're required to do, what you should not do, and essentially get onto the forms tab, print it off, and start communicating with your tenants. I'm also encouraging my clients, you've got to screen your tenants. It's more important now than it's ever been, trying to find people with economically stable jobs, or consider just putting people on a month-to-month. You know, it's not that we can't evict people. I mean, a lot of tenants violate their leases. I mean, we've got unauthorized girlfriends. We've got dogs. We've got trash on the balcony. We've got all sorts of things going on in these units. But you're going to have to become, again, you're going to have to become an aware landlord. You have to go out there and find these violations. This order doesn't apply to violations of the lease. This order doesn't apply to month-to-month tenancies. Some of my clients are just throwing their hands up in the air and saying, great. I hate being a landlord. I'm losing. I don't want you to get that kind of attitude. You know, we can still file cases of all types, even for non-payment. I'm encouraging people, let's get in line. We don't know if your tenant will file the declaration, and we don't know if your tenant actually qualifies to file that declaration. If tenants file false declarations under oath, I'm going to object. I'm going to drag them into court, put them under oath, make them prove to me. You know, have you made your best efforts to get rental assistance? When did you apply? Where did you apply? Show me your application. Have you made the best efforts to make partial payments, to make payments to your landlord? Show me the receipt. I don't show any receipt of any money. Bad acting tenants don't qualify for this kind of protection. But you're going to have to fight it. Things aren't easy for you anymore. So, you know, in closing, I would say, investors, it feels like we're victims right now. But we can still fight. There's still an avenue for us to be able to have income-producing properties.
I want to say this, Julie. Now, one of the things is, as I was reading, it says anybody that earns more than $99,000 per year or $198,000 for a couple is they're essentially disqualified because of the income that they were earning, correct?
Correct. If they make more than that. Correct. So this is an order that was designed to protect people who have had a significant financial impact because of COVID-19 and are essentially poor. So the CDC determined that people that make more than $99,000 a year don't qualify.
Well, and one of the other things that you were talking about earlier, the order also doesn't apply if there's a safety concern, if the tenants being a problem in the unit, or if there's as you said, trash, they're not maintaining the unit, or they're not keeping up to the lease, then this eviction moratorium doesn't apply at that point.
Correct. And, you know, I spend my day dealing with poor acting tenants, and there's a lot of them out there. This doesn't protect tenants who are using drugs. This does not protect tenants who have unlicensed, inoperable vehicles parked on the lawn. I mean, it comes down to how strong your lease is, but, I mean, most tenants are out there violating some portion of their lease. They've got laundry on the balcony. They've got unauthorized boyfriends. They may have noise complaints. They don't put trash in appropriate receptacles. If you can collect that kind of evidence, we can proceed with those evictions. It might be a coincidence that they also aren't paying their rent, but in my experience, there's two classes of people. Some people have been hit by COVID-19 very hard. They've lost their jobs. They're struggling with how to homeschool since the schools are closed. They're having to make tough decisions. This order is essentially in place to try to prevent the eviction or foreclosure of those people, not people who are out there acting poorly.
Julie, one of the stipulations, as you said, in order to qualify the order for deferment, a tenant must use all available government rental or housing assistance or housing payment available to the individual or any household member. Does this mean unemployment compensation also, or is that one of those things that would be excluded from that?
I don't know. I mean, of course, we don't have any case law that's been handed down yet on this order. It's going to take months for cases to be determined and then work their way up to the Court of Appeals. Most likely, and some of the uncertainty about this order is that we might not have any, controlling case law as to what impacts. But that's definitely a question, because if you say, I'm not able to pay rent due to a COVID-19 reason, I'm going to ask, what was your income prior to COVID-19? Did you qualify for unemployment? What was your income with unemployment? If you've had no financial impact, then you wouldn't qualify, in my opinion. Again, I'm an attorney. I'm not a judge. I don't make the law. I argue the law. So that would definitely be my argument on behalf of a real estate investor. You know, this order was designed to protect people who have been harmed by COVID-19 due to that $600 additional stimulus in unemployment. Some people made more money on unemployment. A lot of people made more money during COVID-19 than they did prior to COVID-19. I think they're going to have to demonstrate under oath, under the penalty of perjury, that they have actually been impacted by COVID-19.
Julie, one of the other conditions that I read under the CDC moratorium for protection, it says you have to have received a stimulus payment. So if you didn't receive a stimulus payment, then you do not qualify for the CDC moratorium, or am I incorrect?
Well, you're a little bit incorrect. In theory, they kind of did it, they crafted this in a way that says relief under the order is limited to those individuals earning no more than $99,000 or those individuals who received a stimulus check. In theory, you should not have received a stimulus check if you make $99,000 or more, or $198,000 for married couples. So this order protects far fewer people in our metropolitan cities on the East and West Coast, where wages are, in theory, significantly larger. Here in the Midwest, not that we don't have a lot of people who make $99,000 a year, but if you're making $99,000 a year, even if you're impacted by COVID-19, they consider you to still have enough wages to pay for living expenses.
So you do work in Missouri as well as Kansas.
Correct.
Are both sides of the state line interpreting the CDC moratorium in the same way? Are there some differences in between how it's been interpreted in Kansas versus Missouri?
Well, this is a federal law, so every state in the country is applying this law. However, we're seeing a significant difference in how different counties and different judges are interpreting this order as opposed to different states. So it's kind of judge by judge by judge. Some judges, particularly in Kansas, are requiring us to send a sample declaration. So the landlord must send a sample declaration to their tenants before filing an eviction. On the Missouri side, they're not necessarily requiring that. They're requiring the landlord to file an affidavit that they have not received a declaration. So it's small differences, but landlords out there representing themselves who are not reading, who are not listening to this, are going to have to jump through a bunch of hoops and are probably not going to understand, within 24 hours or probably 48 hours of this CDC order coming down, I had 11 different executive orders or orders interpreting it from 11 different courts. And of those 11 courts, only 3 of them were in agreement. So this is really courthouse by courthouse. In Kansas, we also have a governor's moratorium. And it's interesting kind of how these moratoriums play together and how they differ and which one controls. I'm taking a pretty conservative perspective in saying that I am going to require all of my Kansas landlords to comply with both of them, not just one of them. So we also need to comply with the moratorium in the governor's executive order 20-61, and now that was just extended in executive order 20-64. That essentially, it's interesting, it shifts the burden in the state moratorium to the landlord to prove that they're not filing any cases on tenants who have suffered a significant loss of income because of COVID-19 or have had a significant increase in necessary expenses because of COVID-19 or they've been unable to work because of COVID-19. So this is why I'm saying that landlords are going to have to landlord harder than they've ever landlorded before. you're going to have to become a social worker. You're going to have to talk to your tenants. And if they won't talk to you, you're going to have to start sending them a lot of letters so that their lack of communication with you makes you reasonably believe that whatever or whyever they're not paying you is not related to COVID-19 because you specifically asked them and they didn't respond. So that's why I've crafted, again, a number of letters, sample letters, on my website under mokslaw.com under the Forms tab. So you can see under the Forms tab, I have all these different categories of letters. If you're a Kansas landlord, you need to read the Kansas Executive Order forms. You know, obviously everybody in the country needs to read the federal executive order forms. If you have a federally backed mortgage, or you take a voucher or any type of federal assistance on behalf of your tenant, you need to read the CARES Act forms. And in each category, I kind of outline, like, what is this? Like, what does this mean? And what form should I be sending to my tenant? What's necessary? So every day I have lawyers here who are writing, distributing information to real estate investors and landlords, trying to inform them, you know, in a way in which you don't have to sit down and read a 600-page Corona Relief Act passed by Congress. It's very difficult if you're doing this on your own and you're not an attorney. It's even difficult as an attorney to sit down and read some of these just voluminous orders. So we're breaking it down for people so that it can be understood by landlords, explaining how they can comply. For me, I'm not even letting my clients comply. I'm just complying for them. Other lawyers are not taking that perspective. They're saying, you know, the landlord needs to comply, and we're just simply attorneys. But not that I don't trust you guys out there. I just prefer to do it myself. That way I know it's done right.
Julie, one of the things it says, you must make your best efforts to make a timely partial payment that are as close to the full amount as possible during possible circumstances may permit. Can a renter say that they don't have any income and try to avoid paying any rent during this period of moratorium?
Oh, they're sure trying. If I believe that's not true, I intend on objecting, pulling them into court and saying, show me your bank statements. Do you have a Netflix account? Do you have a cell phone? Do you watch Hulu? Those are not necessary expenses. I'm going to ask the court to say that they made decisions like going out and buying, you know, a big screen TV, but not paying your rent. This order should not protect those tenants. This order was designed to protect, well, one, it's in place because they didn't want extensive national homelessness, where people are just living on the streets spreading coronavirus. That's what it's really there for. But it was designed to protect tenants who have actually been harmed significantly because of coronavirus. Not selfish people who went out and bought big screen TVs and watching Netflix on their couch collecting unemployment. I intend to fight. I'm going to fight on behalf of landlords. I mean, if they want me to. Obviously, it's up to the landlord. Some of my clients are saying, I don't want to deal with it, I don't want to pay for it, and I'll just catch you next year. I mean, that's an option. A lot of my clients are saying, no, I'm not going to be taken advantage of. I want you to put them under oath. I want you to question what their necessary expenses are. I mean, obviously, people need hygiene products. People need clothing. I mean, a reasonable amount of clothing. People need food. People need utilities and water. All the income they have are spent on those necessary living expenses and they really don't have any other income, unless they didn't have any other income prior to the entry of this order, then I would say there is no difference in their lifestyle and they need to move. But if people are truly harmed and in bad places because of coronavirus, I don't think we're going to be able to evict them for non-payment of rent. But if they're playing their TV too loud, they're disturbing their neighbors, they're doing drugs, they're shooting people, they're threatening, then, yeah, we'll evict them for something else.
So let me ask this question. But what those tenants also need to understand is that if they wait until the moratorium ends December 31st, then they get evicted, all of that rent and all of those late fees would most likely be awarded to the landlord. So now they could be looking at a garnishment that could sit out there theoretically for until they paid it off.
Yes, for 10 years in Missouri, and for essentially seven, it'll be a record for 7 years in Kansas and 10 years in Missouri, and I can renew it. So this decision to kind of forego all rent, not even try, is going to result in very large judgments next year.
So, Julie, if a tenant is making partial payments, does the order prevent a landlord from charging fees for late payments?
No. You can charge them all the way through. Now, that's not true under the CARES Act. So if you have a federally backed mortgage, or you're taking a Section 8 voucher or some other federal benefit on behalf of your tenant, there were a series of months in which you could not charge late fees or any fees associated with the non-payment of rent. But if you have a normal mortgage or you own your property outright and you're a landlord, you can charge late fees, you can charge any type of penalties, you can charge everything your lease provides for.
So, Julie, how does the order apply for roommates? Because a lot of people are roommates, tenants in common, and one roommate has the money to pay the rent and they're paying their portion, but the other tenant does not have their portion. And that, you know, they may have lost their job impacted by COVID. How does the order work in that situation?
Well, again, we don't have any case law that has exactly interpreted whether or not we'll be permitted to evict one roommate and not the other if one qualifies and one does not. Most leases provide for joint and several liability. That means on behalf of the landlord, a tenant's choice of girlfriend, boyfriend, or roommate, it doesn't matter. I can collect the entire rent against any one on the lease. Just because you have poor decision-making as a tenant and who you chose as a girlfriend and she doesn't have any income, that doesn't mean that I cannot collect all of that rent against the boyfriend or vice versa. I can choose my tenant to go after the entire amount. There are going to be scenarios in which one person in the household qualifies under this order and maybe several do not. And we're going to just have to figure that out on a case-by-case basis. It's not that I have never evicted one person in a house and not others, but I don't know that that's going to be the decision that we make. We'll just have to wait. You know, we'll give the very best advice we can on the facts in front of us.
So let me ask this question. So the landlords have all of these responsibilities under the CDC eviction moratorium. Do the tenants have any responsibilities under this mandate?
Well, they have the responsibility for completing an affidavit or declaration and filing it with the court. Under the penalty of perjury, they have the responsibility to prove or to truthfully state how they've been impacted by COVID-19, to truthfully state that they've used their best efforts to obtain rental assistance. So in my opinion, yes, tenants are obligated to go out there and try and get rental assistance. You don't just get to sit on the couch and not pay. You need to go out there and apply for Section 8. You need to go out there and apply for assistance. I have on my website under the tenant resources page and under the form page, tenant resources for dealing with COVID-19. So you landlords out there, click on it. It has, hold on, 3 pages single-spaced of all types of charities, all type of employers. You know, there's community league services, there's Community Link, the Community Assistance Council, there's 4 or 5 churches on here that are helping people. There's the Northland Assistance, Operation Homefront, Restart, Church, the Salvation Army, Save Inc. And so I've listed all these charities that are out there helping tenants pay their rent. And then I'm listing a lot of different employers who are willing to expedite their hiring right now, and they're willing to expedite hiring in the age of COVID-19. Maybe it's not the job of your dreams to work at Hy-Vee, Price Chopper, St. Luke's, Pizza Hut, Domino's, Papa John's, Amazon, Walmart, CVS. So I'm telling landlords, put these resources in front of your tenants and say, let's go apply. Let's get some rental money for you. Because if they just sit around and do nothing on their own behalf, this order says, tenants, you need to use your best efforts to pay as much rent as you can. So if you cannot show me that you've lost income, if you made a certain amount of money last December, January, February, before COVID-19, and you're making that same amount of money now, even if it's small, in my opinion, you don't qualify for this. Again, I'm an attorney. I represent real estate investors. So I'm here talking about the real estate investor's perspective. There are other attorneys that represent tenants, and they may take a different perspective. And I know legal aid services are saying every tenant in the country qualifies. But that's just not the plain language of this order. I think tenants need to get up and try. Try and pay your rent. Try and get help.
You know? You're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI. This is Cowtown Conversations. And our guest today is Ms. Julie Anderson of Anderson & Anderson, and we're talking about the CDC eviction moratorium. So stay tuned. Right back after this short break. We're back. This is Cowtown Conversations. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. And today our guest is Ms. Julie Anderson, attorney of Anderson & Anderson, and we're talking about the CDC eviction moratorium. Are you still with us, Julie?
I am, yes.
So as we talk about, well, let's go back. If a tenant, I know we may have mentioned this earlier, but I want to reiterate it. If a tenant does not sign the CDC form, then they have no protection from the CDC mandate.
Correct.
So, and is on the tenant to get that form. Who does that form need to be turned into? Or how does that form need to be processed?
The form can either be turned into your landlord. I mean, if there's a tenant out there that qualifies, they should file it into the court, into their landlord, or into the attorney for their landlord. Anyway, it should make its way up to the courthouse. As an attorney for landlords, if a tenant sends it to me or sends it to my client, I will electronically file it with the court so that the court is on notice that that declaration has been received and filed. Then I'm sitting down with a client and we're having a conversation. What do you know about this tenant? What's going on in their life? Have you reached out to them? Have you tried to work with them? Have you been in communication with them? If not, get in contact with them. Find out what's going on. You know, did they recently lose their job? Are they struggling because of COVID-19, because the public schools have closed down and they're at home, they've had to leave their job because they're taking care of their child, or because they've had COVID-19? You got to start communicating with your tenants. I would say about half the time, my clients are saying, yeah, they lost their job, and now since unemployment's back down lower, and, you know, they're good people, and they've been trying to work with me, and they've been making me some partial payments, and I'm going to continue to communicate with them, go ahead and let it go. I'll work with them for the remainder of the year. The other half of the time, my clients are saying, they're bad actors. They've been receiving unemployment, or I see them go to work every day. They're working. You know, I've got some fact scenarios right now where tenants told the landlord, I don't want to be bothered by you. Stop talking to me about my rent. I'm busy. I'm an essential worker. Okay, you don't qualify for this then. You know, I'm going to contest it, and I'm going to request the court to strike your declaration as not being truthful, and I'm going to request to move forward and proceed with the eviction.
As we talked about earlier, that the tenant who wishes to invoke the order must sign a declaration stating there's four things under that declaration that the tenant must state. Can you repeat what those are so people would know, you know, what the tenant must state and how it must be stated in that declaration?
Sure. So there's a sample declaration on my website under the forms tab. If you know, for especially in Kansas, the landlord is required to send that out to the tenants. And there's a series of check boxes where they have to check, you know, that they don't make over $99,000 or $198,000, that they are unable to pay their rent because of COVID-19, that if they would be evicted, they would be homeless or would have to live, you know, in an unsafe, close-quartered facility. Which could promote the spread of COVID-19, and that they've used their best efforts to obtain rental assistance, and that they've used their best efforts to pay as much rent as they can. So tenants who have been unemployed and then reemployed and unemployed, you know, they're going to have to state under oath, I've used my best efforts to pay as much rent as I can. So if you've been employed and you're making income, I don't think this order is intended to protect tenants who are choosing to buy big screen TVs versus pay their rent. You've got to use best efforts to try and work with your landlords and try to pay your rent.
So, Julie, a lot of this order is subjective and based on the tenant saying that they can't pay rent. If it's a close call, who's going to make that choice or that decision?
The judge. Well, the landlord is going to make the decision whether or not they're going to just accept the declaration on its face and sit and wait until next year, sit in line and wait until next year, which is why I'm telling real estate investors, I think you need to keep filing. The last thing you want to do is wait until next year when the courts are just overwhelmed and flooded to get your petition on file. You know, I think landlords need to get in line, and if we have to wait till next year, okay, you're already in line. So some tenants, some landlords are making the decision not to fight them. They're like, okay, it is what it is. They filed a declaration. I'm not going to press the truthfulness of the declaration. I'm going to accept it. In that case, we will try to get a court date in January. And when I say try, you got to understand, the courts are very overwhelmed right now. Depending on the county, they're trying to socially distance. They're having smaller dockets. Those dockets are spread out further and further apart. We've had not a significant number, but we've had a number of judges who are older, retire, just saying they don't want to be back in person. They don't want coronavirus. So they've made the election to retire, which means we need more judges. So there's a series of factors that could delay this. There's also a lot of chatter, truthful or not truthful, as to this upcoming election, what's going to happen. If we have one presidential candidate or one president versus another, could this moratorium be extended well into next year, where some landlords are going to face, without any compensation, more than a year? It could be a year and a half with no rental income. It could be pretty devastating.
And that can cause more additional filings of bankruptcies and different things just based off of that. So right prior to the coronavirus, once the landlord filed, how long did it take to get into court at that particular time?
Well, of course, everything depends on everything depends on what county and what judge we're talking about. On my website, under the forms tab, mokslaw.com, I have a bunch of frequently asked questions. So, and I also compare all the different kinds of eviction procedures and how long it takes. So I'll have like Missouri frequently asked questions and Kansas frequently asked questions. So if you pull up on that forms tab, the Missouri comparison of eviction procedures, it outlines what kind of timeline in Missouri you're looking at. So prior to coronavirus, we were looking at about 55 to 82 days start to finish for an eviction. And on an emergency eviction, meaning there's drugs or violence or something like that, we were still looking at 22 to 53 days. Missouri takes significantly longer than Kansas. In Kansas, in some counties, we're running only 24 days. So 24 to 45 days in Kansas, definitely not looking at that 3 or 4 month mark. So I have to remind landlords that are out there just too scared to file or too overwhelmed to move forward. Once I start the process, even next year, it could take 80 days in Missouri. So that's an additional 80 days while I'm going through the process of eviction where you're not going to make income. So if you don't want to get started and get filing and get, you know, to exercising your rights as a landlord, you could go 6 months without income plus another 82 days while we're legally removing them.
So, Julie, if a landlord filed for eviction before the mandate went into effect, can they still evict that tenant?
No. So, on behalf of the investor, a little bit of an unfortunate aspect to this is that the tenant can file this declaration at any time while the case is pending up to lockout. So we are anticipating that, you know, some tenants, once they learn about this declaration, will be filing that declaration, you know, the minute that they're locked out. Then we have to go back to the court and determine whether or not, well, then it goes back to the client, and the client gets to decide, the landlord gets to decide, yep, you know what, they are pretty unfortunate, and they've been impacted by COVID-19, and I know they're really struggling. Let me help them find some rental assistance, or let's contest it. They don't qualify. We'll have to go back to court, which, again, could cause some relatively significant delays, particularly as we get closer and closer to January. I mean, after December 31st, I mean, we could be looking at thousands and thousands of cases, which puts us, you know, this entire order is one of those things that just sort of kicks the problem down the road, kicks a can down the road, I guess the saying is. They were very concerned about just mass numbers of evictions after the CARES Act expired, and now we're kind of kicking that down to January. So, depending on what kind of Congress and Senate we have, this thing might be extended. We might be under this moratorium well into next year.
I know in doing research for the show, some on the East Coast, they were doing some different things. Some landlords were filing suit against the mandate, saying essentially that the government was forcing them to house people at no pay.
Correct.
What are some of the other things that we're seeing that maybe, as you said, could come up? Because we don't know exactly, none of us has a crystal ball, we can't see the future.
I do have a magic eight ball here in my office. So for people that ask me questions like, what's going to happen if this presidential candidate is elected? I'm like, here, let me get my magic eight ball. And I'll say, you know, I don't know. We don't know. Well, you can definitely say large investment / landlord organizations are filing suit against the CDC, stating this is not within their power to essentially take. This is a taking of property, meaning the government is taking your investment, giving it to someone who they consider to be poor for no compensation to you. And you have, if you choose to take matters into your own hand, outside of the law, you could be fined up to $500,000 or more and spend a couple years in jail. And the Department of Justice will look for bad acting landlords who take the front door off, just throw everybody's stuff in the yard, boot the car, turn off the utilities. You just can't do that. We've got to use the court system and every mechanism that we have legally, which is why, you know, it's kind of interesting. This order only outlines penalties against landlords who violate it. It does not outline any penalties against tenants who file false affidavits. They're leaving that penalty, the penalty of perjury, to the courts to enforce.
I know, Julie, as our time is winding down here, you're going to be speaking tomorrow at a Zoom event tomorrow morning. Can you tell listeners a little bit about the event and how they can get more information and sign up for that Zoom?
I was like, oh, gee, I should definitely look at that. I know I have some emails in here. Yeah, tomorrow morning there's going to be a panel of attorneys. I'm going to be talking about this CDC order again. I'm out there talking and writing every day. Like I said, I've got four lawyers here, and we're literally writing all the time, trying to let investors know what's going on, what steps they should be taking. So tomorrow I'm going to be talking about this CDC order. We have an attorney from the Kansas side who's going to be talking about that executive order 2061 and 2064 that came down from Governor Laura Kelly. We've also got an attorney who's going to be talking about how the Missouri courts are handling these declarations and what requirements a landlord has, you know, what these affidavits look like. So, and we have more and more executive orders, advisory opinions from the courts coming down daily. So, you know, we just got one from Clay County. We're waiting for one from Platt County, Buchanan County, Leavenworth County. I think we've heard from Cass County, but it's not yet published. Johnson County has published theirs. Wyandotte County has published theirs. So we're getting, each week that goes by, we're getting more advisory opinions and executive orders coming down from the presiding judges of each county court that give us guidance on how they're going to deal with these federal moratoriums and mandates. So everything's changing every week. You know, something that I might have said, I'm teaching seminars frequently. We essentially have a full-time employee here who is answering questions on behalf of investors all day, helping them get the right notices in their hand, helping them get the right letters. And really, we want to get out there the message that there are resources. Landlords are not victims by this order. You don't have to be victimized. There are ways that we can work with these tenants to make sure that we're getting some rental assistance that goes to the landlord. So come January or whatever date they choose to extend this to, you're not at a complete income loss. Just a, you know, at risk of foreclosure yourself.
And that event, to find that event website, yeah, you can go to Eventbrite and look up under CDC Eviction Moratorium. And it's going to be tomorrow starting at 10 a.m. via Zoom for those who want to get some information and maybe didn't listen today. Are they, you know, afraid of going out? Then they can definitely listen to it and ask the same questions from the privacy of their home. So, Julie, you've given out your website many times, but can you reiterate your website one more time for those who may want to look at resources you may have? And if they've got a question, they can get out your phone number where they can give your office a call.
Sure. Yeah, all over our website. So our website is www.mo for Missouri, KS for Kansas, LAW, which is for the law.com, MOKSlaw.com. And we just have tons of free resources for real estate investors and landlords out there. All of our forms are in Word format that can be downloaded. You can put your own logo on them and utilize them as their own. We do this as a public service to landlords because I used to just be angry at you guys all the time because you were making things up. So I decided to stop being angry and just give it to you. In Word format, please steal it, take it, use it. I'd rather have you using good state-specific legal forms than downloading things from the internet from another state. And our phone number is 816-931-2207, which is also on our website. And if you have questions, you can just type them in. I think there's a little box somewhere at the bottom of the website, you know, ask an attorney or ask a question. Like I said, I have a full-time employee here every day, 5 days a week, answering questions about this order and the various other executive orders out there and how this impacts landlords' rights. We do not represent tenants, but I do have a tenant resource page so that tenants who are looking for help, tenants that want rental assistance, I'm providing those resources to tenants in the hopes that they'll get the assistance they need in order to pay their rent and stay in their home. That's a win-win situation for both the landlord and the tenant.
So, Julie, as we close out, do you have any last parting words that you would like to leave for those who may be in this situation and kind of unsure what to do?
I mean, if you don't know what to do, ask a question. Don't make it up. So I have two parting messages to real estate investors all the time. One, this is a highly emotional time, but I really don't want to hear from investors. We are just victims throwing your hands up. I'm getting out of the industry. I can't handle it. This is just too much attack on me. Yes, we're under attack, but we don't have to be victims. There are resources available for investors as well as tenants. The courts, you know, if you're following the law, the courts will also, you know, I have every belief to believe that the courts will also follow the law. And so that's my first and my second comment to landlords is just please keep clean records. I just pray for you that you will keep clean records and utilize legal forms, not things that you make up. You know, if you, I have clients who just like to sit down and read things and make things up. Stop making it up. I'm giving it to you for free. You know, stop making up your own legal notices. Stop Googling or talking to your friend who's in New York or Oregon or, you know, even if you're in Missouri, stop talking to your neighbor in Kansas. It matters that you use state-specific legal forms. And rather than me making you go out there and guess where to find them and how to use them, we have just put them up on our website. Whether you're a client of mine or you're not, I still will say on behalf of the entire Bar Association, we'd rather have you using good state-specific notices.
So I would like to thank local attorney Julie Anderson for being our guest today. We never end Cowtown Conversations without our Community Minute. Tomorrow, Operation Breakthrough is going to be hosting a COVID testing from 9 a.m. to noon. And on Saturday, East Patrol will be having COVID testing. Saturday, September 19th, they'll have it at East Patrol from 9 a.m. to noon. Operation Breakthrough is located at 3039 Troost, and East Patrol is located at 2640 Prospect. You can pre-register for this test by going to https://redcap.kumc.edu/survey. And for those of you who may not caught that, it's on the Cowtown Conversations Facebook page. Saturday, Metropolitan Missionary Baptist Church, located at 2310 East Linwood, will be having another mobile food pantry. Saturday, September 19th, from 11:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. It will be located in the back parking lot. Remember, for those who have not filled out their census information, the census is vital to our community as it determines how much the area will receive in federal funding. It is estimated that Missouri lost out on over $6 billion in the last 2010 campaign. I know that many people register to vote, but those who aren't registered to vote still have time to vote. In Missouri, the deadline is October the 7th. In Kansas, you have until October the 13th. And I know there's a lot of confusion about mail-in ballots, absentee ballots. Next week, we're going to have a League of Women Voters on. We're going to be talking about Jackson County and Kansas City election and what the rules are then. Then the week after, we're going to talk about Wyandotte County and Johnson County with the Kansas chapter of the league to talk, so people will know exactly what they need to do to ensure their vote is counted and their voice is heard. For Cowtown Conversations, has been your host, Joseph Jackson. Have a great day, stay safe, and stay tuned for My Place with Larry J. We'll be right back.